Cuba.
What sound was that?
I don't know.
It's the sound that the droid makes when it's helping Padme give birth.
Wow.
Ooba. Ooba.
Is that their version of Raise the Roof?
Ooba. I think you missed your calling, man. You're supposed to be a mechanical midwife.
I want to see all the droids at a rave now going, Ooba. Ooba. That cantina band just really took off.
And it's as if suddenly millions of women's water broke. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. That did not turn out how I planned.
And then the rave was silenced.
And outlawed. The Empire did some things right, and that was one.
The baby starts crying. He doesn't like you. I don't like you either.
Exactly. Speaking of taking jokes too far.
No. Where we're going, there is no too far.
Welcome to
the Fantastic
Justice
Squad.
Super Bondo
Brother.
Friends.
The review stuff.
All right, welcome to another episode of our show, everyone. I'm Sancho Panda. With me, as always, is Secret Alias Man. What's your alias today?
Oh, I forgot.
We never saw it coming. It totally throws off your scent.
I was so busy being professional, making a lot of show notes. I forgot to disguise my identity.
Busted.
Busted.
Well, we've made it to episode 11. Do you know what that means?
Yes, it means okay. I get to go into an ocean with George Clooney.
Yeah, it's heist time.
Right? No?
Uh-huh.
I get to rob a casino with George Clooney in an ocean. I think so. I don't know. I didn't see Oceans 1 through 10. I might be a little lost on the plot.
You didn't catch all the prequels?
No.
Which they will no doubt do at some point.
There were so many unanswered questions from Oceans 9.
I thought it meant, well, if it's 11, it could just be two ones next to each other. So it could be Star Wars Episode 2. We could be in some of the worst romantic dialogue of all time.
I don't know. I think... I love you. You're too young. I love you. You're still a little young for me. I've just killed an entire village of women and children. I love you too.
So you're a bad boy. My father always told me to stay away from men like that. Suddenly I find you inexplicably attractive.
You know, I see this movie as an adult and I'm like, oh, now you tell me.
We really can't be together. Let me tell you that while my bust is coming out of my dress and we're sitting by a romantic fireplace.
Padme tore her shirt more than Captain Kirk.
And that's saying something. So, today we are talking not Star Wars, but Star Trek.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
Because we've seen the movie and we have lots to say about it.
We do. I thought, actually, that it would have more Stark tech.
Stark tech.
I was all excited about the repulsor rays and, you know, but no.
No.
Turned out it was just all this Federation stuff.
Turns out Disney actually doesn't have their hands on this franchise yet. And just everybody else, except DC.
What was the name of the big Hulkbuster suit? Tony named it. What was the name of it?
Like Viola? Veronica?
Veronica. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the end, I wanted to see Kirk fight crawl and say, that's it, I'm calling Veronica.
That would have made it very anticlimactic, I think. It's
supposed to be Stark Tech Beyond, but okay.
Or were you still wanting Klingons in it?
I still was.
So it's still Star Trek Beyonce. If you like it, then you should have put a Klingon on it.
Oh.
It's the best joke I've ever made in my life. Can't top it, but I'm gonna try. because I just couldn't get the idea of a Star Trek Fiddler on the Roof crossover.
Okay.
So I'm taking it too far. In a new segment, I'm calling Taking It Too Far.
Where other people would have just stopped.
Yeah, you hear about the neutral zone? I passed that. Went through the final frontier, and I'm in the undiscovered country now. You heard about Second Star to the right? That's in my rearview mirror.
Oh my gosh. Men just never ask for directions, do they? You should have pulled over.
I really should have. I'm pretty sure I just referenced episodes 4 through 6 of the original series.
I could just, in my mind now, see Mom and Dad in the front seat with me in the back. And him finally just getting so frustrated that he says, I have an idea. Why don't you drive and I'll criticize?
Man. Anyways, so I'm calling this Star Trek the Musical, Ferengi on the Roof, and no Ferengis were harmed during the making of this.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, Spite. But I'm using next generation characters.
All right.
So here's what I want us to do for this Taking It Too Far, since sometimes one man's trash is another man's treasure. We're going to play a little game in the midst of this called Gold or Garbage. So I'll be pitching this idea, and with every little part of it, you tell me whether you think it's gold or garbage.
Got it.
All right, so we open to an old retired Jean-Luc Picard, or as I like to call him, JLP. And he's working on his vineyard, which is actually canon, because he has a vineyard when he retires.
Yes.
At the very end of the series.
Yes.
So suddenly there's a Data cameo, and he sees JLP in this fragile old state. And Data once again wishes that he could be human, so he starts singing, If I Were a Real Man, 10001001.
All right.
I don't know.
Gold.
Binary code?
Gold so far.
Yes. All right. JLP, as I'll continue to refer to him from now on, returns to his home, and we find that he's actually still married to Beverly Crusher instead of divorced. And they have three daughters. One's name is Diana. The other is... I don't know, Guinan? And the third is Tasha. Those sound a little Jewish, don't they?
Sure.
Oh, so gold or garbage on that part?
I don't have any better names, so okay. I can't criticize.
As the day ends, JLP leads them in a Sabbath prayer of sorts. May the Prime Directive protect you. Do not break it more than 9 times. All right, so that's gold.
That's gold.
Then JLP meets up with the town butcher, Laser Worf. See what I did there? But I had to make him Vulcan, because when they agree to marry, it works better for the song to be long life, and prosper. Div Torhes Amusma, long life. And that was actual Vulcan there, so be impressed.
I am impressed. And also, the Vulcan live long and prosper is from a Jewish tradition.
Oh, snap. Unfortunately, before the... betrothal can become official, Dana gets impregnated by a mysterious beam of light.
What?
I know, right? She decides to keep the child and is liking the name Anakin.
Oh, that wedding and the beam of light. Why can't it go smooth? Why does it never go smooth?
But like any good Jewish father, JLP offers his second daughter instead. That's actually quite biblical to do that. And if you're listening, it's okay for me to say these things because we're actually 1/16th Jewish, so none of this is offensive, right?
Only to the other 15/16ths of us.
All right. So Worf and daughter number two have a child and name him Fievel, but he gets lost on an away mission. But that's another tale. Get it?
Yes.
And then Fievel goes west and reenacts the OK Corral shootout. Act 3, the third daughter elopes with a red shirt against JLP's wishes, and when it seems like life could not get any worse, surprise twist, the whole thing was just a simulation on the holodecka, holodecka, wasn't real, no big deal, holodecka, and scene, everybody bows.
And scene, Wesley, you later.
I wanted to fit him in.
Well, I swooped down like the Millennium Falcon and tossed you that one.
Thanks, Ro. So that's my joke that I took way too far. It probably took up way too much of our podcast time, too.
Never.
So, on to the movie itself. Time for a movie review. We're going to do unspoiled talk. and then some spoilers, and then our panda rating. So we're going to start with unspoiled talking points.
Yes.
And the first thing that I didn't actually think about until in the middle of the movie was the fact that if this movie happened 3 years into their mission, it would have been around the same time that the original series ended. Because it lasted for 3 seasons.
That's right. And another neat little nugget is you hear Kirk enter into the log that this is day 966.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reference to the year 1966, which was the first Star Trek episode.
Wow, full circle.
Full circle.
So I had a question for you. How do you think they handled the passing of not just one, but actually two actors in this movie?
I thought beautifully.
Yeah.
And with Leonard Nimoy, who passed away in 2015, they had an opportunity to gear something intentional. And with the actor that played Chekhov, it was a shock to everyone, and it happened post-production.
Right, right.
So it was just nice to see what they had done with him anyway, because mm-hmm. it seemed like they loved his character on his own merits, and they loved Anton, on the actor, on his own merits, and they just gave him a great role to play because they really liked him. And sort of like Heath Ledger as the Joker, who would have won the Oscar anyway, it was just nice to see his performance stand for the legacy that he made it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did a whole lot with the small part that he had.
He did. And I especially liked that in this new reality, it's Chekhov that's the ladies' man.
Yeah. How did Eric Bana cause that to happen?
I don't know, but I guess the new Kirk realized, I'm the captain of a ship. I can't just go around hitting on every girl in the hallway. So that left the hallway wide open.
Who knew who would fill the void? It was Chekhov.
Yeah.
All right. So next we're going to talk just strengths and weaknesses. And you'll name a strength and I'll name a weakness. And we'll see who can come up with more.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I think you're going to win, but we'll see.
All right. Here's the strength. Wait, but this is non-spoiler?
Yes.
All right, this is fine. This doesn't ruin the movie. Okay. This film had the best F-bomb that was not an F-bomb that I've ever seen in any movie.
All right, that's a strength. Ding.
That is
the
a
judges
strength.
Agree with that. It's a clean hit.
So, as we all know, Bones is famous for saying, "Damn it, Jim, I'm a this,
uh-huh.
not a that. I'm a doctor, not a whatever." So, in this film, Kirk makes Bones do something that he doesn't want to do, and he's standing on the transporter pad, being forced to go do this thing, and he's yelling at Jim, and he goes, "Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a fuck." And right as he starts the F-bomb, the transporter kicks in.
And it actually could have been another word, but I like the idea that it was just a flat-out F-bomb.
That was amazing.
Yeah, well done. Okay, so I'd say this is a weakness, but you feel free to contest any of my points as I can yours.
Go.
I felt like the hand-to-hand combat was a little underwhelming.
Ah, well, he should have called in Veronica.
Exactly. Yeah, there was just something about it. Maybe it was directed in a way where it's a little bit harder to tell necessarily what's happening sometimes in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as clear. It's not as panned out. And also, I guess I was expecting the alien girl, who I think did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting her fighting style to look a little more alien.
Oh.
She just looked like Rey. You know, she had a staff. And go ahead.
Perhaps you expected her to attack with Capafeo.
Naturally, considering the rocky terrain.
Unless your opponent has studied Agrippa, which they have.
So the Dread Pirate Roberts trained her. That's her problem.
But you're right. She did seem a little Rey. I mean, she lived in a crashed ship. And
oh, goodness, yes.
She worked with old technology, and she fought with a staff. And she was plucky and pretty, but don't tell her she's pretty, because she'll hit you.
Do you have a boyfriend somewhere? A cute boyfriend?
Are you asking Sulu?
Maybe. All right, back to you. Strength.
Strength. This was, in my recent memory, one of the best We Can Work Together for a Better Future movies
Okay.
that I've seen. you have a crew who, like you said, they're 3 years into this mission, so they're good at what they do now.
Mm-hmm.
And so now when a crisis comes, they just rally.
And right, yeah.
You see each of the characters bring each of their skills in this wonderful, almost symphonic harmony of not only do we know individually what to do, but we know how to work with each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a really experienced sports team where you don't even have to tell the other person what to do. They just know what to do. Like a basketball team.
That's a really good example. You get the sense that these guys are passing the ball behind their back just because they're that good with each other.
Yeah. All right. Total strength. A weakness? Maybe you'll disagree with me on this, but I felt like there wasn't as much humor and I kind of missed it.
Oh, I don't... Not as much as what?
Because... Not as much as the first two movies. Like, as it didn't get as silly. Like, I'm thinking of Kirk getting numb tongue.
Oh, okay.
Like, I didn't feel like there was as much of, like, a jovial laugh out loud part to it.
I suppose. Okay. Maybe this was just a little bit more, we're used to this family and this is how the family interacts with each other and some of how they interact is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still done well, but for me, I remember leaving it thinking, huh. You noticed the change in tone, which was probably needed, but I still noticed it.
Although I did laugh at the part where Scotty is on the planet and it's all this rock that kind of makes you remember the 60s TV series, the way they had the paper mache rocks.
Uh-huh.
And he's going into a somewhat dangerous situation and he looks around and there's a rock about the size of his hand and he goes, eh, and he just sort of shrugs and picks it up and it looks like this paper mache rock.
He was going to employ Three Amigos method. I'll throw a rock to distract him.
Stand over there and hit him with a rock!
All right, so back to you, Strength.
Strength the new leather jackets.
Yeah, they did look cool.
I want one of those new leather jackets with the yellow stripies on the shoulder.
I'm totally on board with that.
There's just something a little bit kick butt about when Kirk and Chekhov are wearing the motorcycle jackets.
Which comes in really handy considering somehow there's a motorcycle on this planet.
Oh, spoiler.
What's in the trailers? All right. Weakness, and this is a serious weakness for me. Weakest villain so far?
I'm going to agree with you on that.
He's not terrible, but compared to what we had in the first two, I think he's not as good, not as fleshed out.
And we'll get to this in spoilers, but I think it took too long to explain why he's a rage monster.
And they don't even explain it very well.
So by the time you get there, it does seem a little formulaic of insert villain here.
Mm-hmm. But a strength, if I can switch sides. We're not really keeping score. A strength is he's not fleshed out as much, but that sacrifice gives more time for us to see the crew do what they do, and that's done so well.
True. But while we're on the topic, it did occur to me, what if we had a villain where we never knew their motivation?
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that made Heath Ledger's Joker what it was, is we didn't really know.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about being an agent of chaos, but for the most part, he was just this force of nature.
Right, right.
And you have to know that in the real world, sometimes there are bad guys, there are serial killers, there are terrorists, and they don't always let you know why they're doing what they're doing. You're not always privy. And I think mm-hmm. it might have been interesting if this villain was one of those where you get to the end and we defeated him, but we actually never knew what was up.
Yeah, I think that can be done in an interesting way. Yeah, it would have been different, and I would have applauded that, probably.
It would have been bold, but I think it could have worked.
They would have boldly gone and done it. That was bad. All right, well, we're already flirting with the line, so let's go ahead and move into spoilers. Cue the spoiler music!
Spoilers! I love it every time.
It's a symphony of something. I don't know.
Well, considering it that I imagined myself as some 80s hair band lead singer, it's a symphony of self-deception is what it is.
So, my first question with spoilers is, who was your favorite pairing? Because, okay, now everyone who's watched this with us, people get paired off in different groups. We've got Uhura and Sulu. We've got Kirk and Chekov. We've got Spock and Bones and Scotty and the alien girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was your favorite pairing?
Oh, I'm gonna say Spock and Bones.
I think everyone has to say that, right?
But there were no bad pairings.
Yeah, that's true.
I liked seeing Chekov sort of step up a bit.
In what way? I'm trying to remember now.
Wasn't he the one who suddenly reached his hand down on the railing and saved Kirk?
Doesn't that happen in every movie?
I know, but this time it got to be Chekov.
Yeah! Oh, well.
It's like in the writer's room, they have this big Wheel of Fortune thing of who gets to reach their hand down off the railing and save Kirk, and they spin it, and it goes, hey!
We can Chekov. But the Spock and Bones, they just had the best dialogue between them.
And you could feel the affection. Again, they're three years in. They're somewhat brothers now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the
type of brothers who never want to admit their true feelings, and which is adorable.
Really? I have no idea what that's like.
Because I just always hug your leg. Even today, I feel like gatherings. It's getting old, right?
Well, you know, dry cleaning is expensive.
I've tried to stop the tears, but they just flow. They flow, man. What can I say? So, yeah, I thought if I could give a who did their best job of acting their part, I'd have to say it was Zachary Quinto. Made the part where he's like laughing because you don't know if he's delirious or if he's actually letting his emotions out and laugh at a joke. Like, it's just done so well. And it actually scares Bones. He's like, what is happening? I've just seen a side of you I never saw before, and I now realize I never wanted to see it.
And what's great is that when Bones has that face, you know somewhat he's thinking medically, like, what is happening?
Yes, there's like genuine concern. Like, is this what cardiac arrest looks like from a Vulcan? Yep, all the pairings were good.
All the pairings were good.
Whose struggle did you find more interesting? Spock's of struggling with his mortality or Kirk of struggling with his legacy? That's a tough question to ask, but I'm asking it anyways.
I'm going to say Spock's because Kirk, if he wanted to give up the Enterprise and take a position as Admiral, could still have a life that he could imagine would fit for him.
Mm-hmm.
But if Spock were to do what he was contemplating, he would have to give up his relationship with Uhura. He would have to give up his family on the Enterprise. There would be a lot more, I think, sacrifice for Spock in order to take on the burden of old Spock's legacy.
Right, right.
And so as a struggle then, because for him it would have been a bigger sacrifice, I think his struggle was greater.
Yeah, I agree. And it was done so well. Yeah, I thought they did a great job with Kirk's as well, but it was just eclipsed in my mind by how good Spock's was.
Right.
So, next question. We were talking about the villain not being very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's time to play Be the Villain.
Sweet!
Cue more music.
Yes!
We already heard Naomi in the background some earlier, I'm pretty sure. There's no way I could have edited it all out. And now we got to hear her again do her evil cackle.
Nice.
So, my first question. You're the villain. What shape would you want your swarm of ships to take as you're charging towards a ship that inexplicably is able to broadcast sound in space?
Form of a water bucket.
I was thinking Green Lantern. A big fist.
Any of the fish in Finding Nemo.
All of the fish in Finding Nemo.
I think I would want it to make some sort of death emoji. Where it starts out as a happy face and then just goes...
Argh! It's the stinking poop.
Like the gingerbread man just from Shrek. Just...
That's now my new favorite. I want him to turn into the gingerbread man from Shrek and try and eat the Enterprise.
That way when someone says, well, what killed you? You just draw a happy face.
Except it wasn't the Enterprise. It was the Franklin?
Yeah.
People would catch me on that. Now you can't. I caught myself. Ha. Take that, angry Twitterers that we don't have. So I do have another question about Be the Villain, but I think mine would come after your analysis of him. So go ahead.
So let's think about Krall from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a pre-Federation Navy guy. He's all about the fighting and the war and the winning and the protecting and the manly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then
alpha male.
The alpha male. And then, oh, no, we're all going to do the peace thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently listen to John Lennon in space and put flowers in our hair. And no, just no. Absolutely no. I thought of some words and they all start with no. So they give him a desk job to be a peace guy. And no.
Is it weird that it made me think of White Christmas? What do you do with the general when he stops being a general?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. But then, you know, they conned him, which is...
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, stop me when this sounds familiar. Ex-war hero, no longer useful, sent to a planet which is... ends up on a planet where he's marooned and desolate.
Right.
He and his crew have to find a way to survive and...
and yeah. Let hatred of the Federation fester.
Yeah. It was so much the same note. It was like I wanted to try and ignore it, and I couldn't.
And, you know, instead of earworms, they find swarm robots.
Which are never really explained where that exactly came from. How many of those people are actually part of the crew? Or were they other aliens that, as he kidnapped more and more, they joined his cause?
I don't know.
The ship wasn't that big, so they couldn't have all been his crew.
No, but again, I mean, that was one of those things that was in this middle ground of it's vague enough that it's not really explained, but not so vague where it was intentional, where we're just not going to tell you and you just have to deal with this as an unknown.
Right, right. They just say a word about they left behind technology and...
Right.
That's what we're using, so...
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be abandoned on a Star Trek planet, it would be really great if there would already be technology sitting around.
Man, Khan got the short end of that stick.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, yes, he was a bit of a rehash villain, but that's what Star Trek does. I mean, Star Trek movies leave villains on planets like Home Alone movies leave Kevin at the house.
That's so true.
And, oh, and they always now need a super weapon.
And manage to come across it.
But let
And it undoes them? Huh.
But let me say that there's part of me that found that charming, as if this film was buying into that repetitive trope.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's because it's kind of a bit of a love letter written by people who love Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we know that villains always... get marooned and fester hatred of the Federation and find a super weapon. But we're going to do that with love. And we know that the Enterprise always gets blown up, but we're going to do that with love.
Right. And it proves that if there's great character arcs and great character development for your heroes, the villain doesn't have to be that great. And I think a lot of the Marvel movies show that too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, by the way, since I'm on this topic, I have a question for you.
All right.
Which has been blown up more? The Death Star?
Oh my gosh.
The Death Star or the Enterprise?
It's gotta be the Enterprise.
Correct. So, in a completely surprise, uncharacteristic move, I did research. I looked into Spock's little eye thing and gained knowledge. So, Star Trek III, the film. They blew up the Enterprise mm-hmm. because Klingons.
Right.
Which Kirk actually blew it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Next Generation in the yesterday's Enterprise, it blew up because Klingons.
Man, those Klingons.
In Next Generation, the episode Cause and Effect, where they kept time looping.
Oh, yeah. It blew up so many times.
It blew up 18 times. Which
That's 9 times 2. Oh.
Exactly. Which, Principal Rooney, is 2 times what?
9 times.
Are you going to try and fit that in every show now?
I really want to put that in again right now, just then. That would be awesome. So I loved that because it was like the revenge of the time loop. Because the Enterprise is always using time travel to get out of situations. I really liked that a time loop kept blowing it up.
Yeah, it was a Groundhog Day-esque episode, and
It blew up again in the film Star Trek Generations because Klingons.
Yay!
It blew up again in the series Star Trek Enterprise because parasites. And a la Captain Kirk, this time Captain Archer blew it up.
Nice.
And it blew up again in Star Trek Beyond because we're covered in bees! So, I used my incredible futuristic calculation devices to add them up.
How many is that?
23 times.
That's a lot more than two.
So,
three if you count Starkiller Base.
That is significantly more than three.
At least 19 more.
I have looked at the data.
All right, so back to Be the Villain. I have one last thing, because maybe he is just being a rage monster, but it seemed like the way that the biological weapon works is it has to be contained. So you open it up so it's attacking on one side, but you can still reach on the other side to call it back in and close it. So if he just releases it on the space station, it's going to be irrecoverable, right?
Yeah.
I know I'm overthinking this, but...
No, you're not.
So if they were saying he could potentially take this and wipe out planets... I'm sorry, after he's done with that one place, he's not going to get to use it again.
Well, you know, some people just want to watch the world get Pandora'd.
It is very Pandora-esque, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And again, that's where the rage monster mentality comes in of, I haven't thought beyond my vengeance.
So, but then, I mean, this is the third movie in a row where they're racing back, chasing after the villain who's headed towards their home planet or... some civilization.
Yeah.
I wish they could have done something else besides that. It could, I mean, if it had just been the Enterprise itself, those people at risk and their lives were saved, I think I would have been okay with that.
So that's an excellent point, because as a series arc, we have now completely fallen in love with these characters and we do care about them as a family. And had it been just a danger to everyone on the Enterprise, we love the people on the Enterprise so much that to us as the viewer, those stakes would have been high enough.
Yeah, and once the crew is no longer in jeopardy themselves, but they're trying to save everybody else, for me that lowers the stakes because I'm no longer as concerned about the crew's lives.
Oh, that's a really good point. And that's actually the problem that I had with the Matrix sequel, is that the people that I cared about from the first film seem to be forgotten in the second one in favor of all the people of Zion and this sort of external threat, that there was a real disconnect from the first attachment that I made to what they wanted me to care about the second one.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Perfect analysis.
Sweet!
What did you think of using music as a weapon?
So... I'll tell you that the very first thing I thought of was Vogon poetry from The Hitchhiker's Guide.
That's awesome.
Because I absolutely hate the Beastie Boys. I can't stand them. I was a teenager
you
when...
You can't stand them. They're just so random. I don't know.
I was a teenager when You Gotta Fight for Your Right to Party came out, and it drove
me... That song
me
was dumb.
Absolutely bonkers. And to have that then become a staple of these new films, I just got over it. I just said, okay, I'm gonna overlook it. But I had a secret inner joy, because to me, that is Vogon poetry. Like, I hate it that much.
So it wasn't the frequency that killed them. It was the Beastie Boys themselves.
It was the music itself. I felt like a drone. I was dying.
So if the Beastie Boys had not existed in that universe, they wouldn't have been able to stop them? Like, they were the only recourse?
We're going to kill all these drones and an otherwise seemingly innocuous Spanish guy in Texas with this music.
So the thought that came to my mind, and it will probably make sense to almost no one, is, hey, look, Min-Mei's destroying the Reavers.
Yeah.
Because people went mad on the edge of space.
Yep.
And there's this giant swarm of insurmountable odds.
Yep.
And then she got up on her microphone and was like, life is only what we choose to make it. And it distracted their signals and they were able to win. Yay! From Robotech. Macross. And by the way, every other Macross has that happen in it. Every other Japanese anime. Macross 7. Macross Plus. Macross 1. Macross Frontier. Ironically, Macross Frontier is the one that's the most like it. Because it's bugs they're fighting.
I hope you're listening to this, the producers of the upcoming Dazzler film.
We've had enough of this music as a weapon tomfoolery.
Please learn.
Stay out of other franchises. Robotech does it best.
Get off my franchise, you kids.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I was like, that was my thing.
I see you just in a rocking chair on a porch reading Mark Twain going, hey!
Stay off my plot trope, lawn. So, I do have a final question if you have no more to say in the spoiler section.
Go for it.
Do you think the director said he was trying to make a Guardians of the Galaxy type of movie? Do you think he succeeded? And was the movie better or worse for it?
I don't know. I see it more as a Deadpool.
What?
No. No.
That is definitely not what I was expecting you to say.
Only because the trend lately has been for an innovative film to come out and then instantly the imitators mm-hmm. burst out the doors.
Right.
And so Guardians of the Galaxy and Deadpool are the two better examples of that. I think that he did succeed in making a Guardians of the Galaxy type film.
And you think it was better or worse for it?
That's a tough question, because if you're going to look at the Star Trek films as a series, that's one thing. If you're going to look at this movie as a standalone, that's another. This movie as a standalone was better for it being a Guardians of the Galaxy type film.
Uh-huh.
As a series, it did still take forward the character arcs, but it had a different tone, which I think the series even kind of needed.
So good on both sides.
Good on both sides. I think it did. I mean, I've heard some other reviews now, and some of the people have said that this was sort of dumbed down. But I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing to take a respite from the overanalyzing type of plots and go to a straight, oh my gosh, something is happening and we have to deal with it kind of plot. So
yeah, I'd agree. How would you rate it among the three then? Like, how would you rank all three of the new ones?
1, 3, 2.
I actually would go 2, 1, 3.
2, 1, 3, as in you liked Into Darkness the best?
Yeah, I actually did.
Okay.
But as far as pandas for this specific movie, though, we still have to give it our panda rating. So what do you think? How many pandas, and are they smiling or frowning? Or?
Well, as you know, I saw this film with a Navy veteran who served on the USS Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did I see it with him, but I brought 5 actual pandas to the theater.
How many of them left? How many of them got up and stormed out?
Only one.
Really?
One of them left saying the villain could have been better. But the other 4 appreciated the strictly enjoyment and adventure aspect, and that it was a fantastic standalone movie, and that it did course correct itself from some of the errors of Into Darkness. And so, of the 5 pandas that I brought to the theater, 4 of them were extremely pleased.
So they all rolled over and one fell out.
Yeah, management was not pleased.
Yeah, I think I'm a little below you. I think the hang-ups hung me up more, if that's a way of saying it. I think I'm giving it 2 smiling pandas, which is still a 7 out of 10. I still really enjoyed it, and I loved everything they did with the main characters. But all the things that we talked about that bothered me, I think bothered me enough to let me not enjoy it as much. But I didn't take as many pandas with me to start with, maybe. Maybe that was my problem. I was already working with a short deck of pandas.
You got the pandas that overslept.
But definitely the strength of the movie was the characters, as we said before. And this brings us to what you want to talk about as a main topic.
So I feel that a story has an arc and characters have an arc. And mm-hmm. when we're talking about films that are a series, a franchise, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that the series itself has an arc.
And Noah.
Yes.
Sorry, go on.
No, Noah has an archy.
Anyways.
So the promise of this film, even in just naming it Beyond, is that they would take these characters in this story where we have not gone before.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, did they do that? So there are, in essence, four types of character arc: a rise, a fall, a shift, and a circle.
I feel like I needed to have sound effects after each of those.
Or a crayon. Now draw a circle. Yeah. So I'm going to try to describe to you what a rise, a fall, a shift, and a circle is, using as often as possible Keanu Reeves.
All right.
So
we need no other vessel.
Whoa. Oh, we have to put that in there. Okay. So a rise is when the character, in essence, says, I am not this person. Wait, now I am.
Mm-hmm. So coming into his own.
A coming into his own. So a Neo.
Mm-hmm. I'm not the one. Oh, I am the one.
A Karate Kid.
I can't karate. I can karate.
That's right. I am.
I can't prune bonsai trees. I can prune bonsai trees.
I am Johnny Karate. No, I have to fight Johnny Karate. Anyway, so...
You're getting him confused with Johnny Football, which was his nickname from Point Break.
Well, Johnny Karate was the character from
Parks and Rec. Yeah.
I am Johnny Karate, and I'm going to guard the galaxy.
Nice.
With Uhura.
I'm so confused.
So there is a fall, mm-hmm. which is, I like who I am. Now that's been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So John Wick.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
There is a shift. I am this person. Now I am the 2.0 of this person.
Mm-hmm.
The Neo in the sequels.
Okay. Not the sequels themselves?
Not the sequels themselves.
They don't improve on the first one, is what you're saying? Because you've never taken a hard and fast stance on that.
Only because of this list am I even admitting that they exist.
Fair enough. And what's the circle?
The circle is, now I'm back to where I started. What a waste of time. Or not.
Okay, so Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Maybe. A better example would be Alex from A Clockwork Orange.
Ooh, darker, but definitely better. I see your point. Yeah.
So, of a character arc following Alex through that journey only to find him back exactly where he started is a fourth method of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So a character arc needs to be more than just learning one big lesson. So Scrooge learned one big lesson.
Right. Uh-huh.
Groundhog Day learned one big lesson. The Last Samurai.
Right, uh-huh.
Avatar. So mm-hmm. what you really need is a more fundamental either growth or destruction of the prior person.
Right, okay.
And an example of, like, the best way to explain what this is to give you an example of what it isn't. Here's a character that never grew. Bruce Wayne.
Wah, wah, wah.
What Bruce Wayne does is he romanticizes and clings to and insists on staying in the past.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he has an obsession with his dead parents. The whole vibe of the grim streets and the underworld and the villains that exist in this darkly romanticized bygone 1940s urban era is him still living in the past. And I love my Batman, but the essence of Bruce Wayne is being stuck in the past. He is still the little boy who is crying.
Right. So did you like the way Nolan actually took that in a different direction and gave him a character resolution?
Yes. Nolan used the trilogy to fix that. He gave Bruce an ending where he had a life with Selina that looked forward and was true growth.
Right, which is something he could afford to do because he's not trying to make comic after comic after comic and keep selling them.
Right, and so the legacy of Star Trek then is that it does look forward. It gives you almost a tremendous acreage where you can have these character arcs because it's not stuck. It's always going forward, forward, forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it began as socially challenging and relevant and thought-provoking in the same way that The Twilight Zone was in its heyday. But it changed and it adapted. So let me ask you, do you think Star Trek as a series has risen, fallen, shifted, or circled?
You mean the new series?
The new series.
I would say it's risen because the characters are not where they were at the beginning.
I would agree. I think that each of these characters is, I was not this person at the beginning, but now I am.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that in Kirk, who was basically Maverick joined Space Top Gun.
Yeah.
So even down to the, I'm going to ride my motorcycle and look longingly at things.
It makes me think of Hot Shots. A loner, huh? No, I own it.
Yeah. Now I want to see Kirk doing those Saturday Night Fever dance moves on the back of the motorcycle.
Make that happen, Hollywood.
Come on, face replacing technology. So the thing about the early Kirk is he was Maverick style, almost rewarded for his bad boy behavior. You know, he gets in a bar fight, and his reward for being in a bar fight is to be invited to join Starfleet by doing nothing more than just showing up the next morning.
Yeah.
And he cheats on a test and is suspended, but then sneaks onto a ship and becomes first officer.
Dude, he could not be the one to write the book on how to become successful, because that is not possible to model.
And then
be in the right place at the right time, suckas.
And then he's marooned on an ice moon for disobeying the captain and attacking security officers. And what happens? He meets old Spock out of an entire universe of places to be. He's like 300 feet away from old Spock. Who gives him the secret to being successful at life. And this guy that just so happens to be like your best friend in the future. But at no point does Kirk admit in that first film to making any mistakes of any kind. He's just this guy who's, yeah, bad boy works for me.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really did like about the beginning of Into Darkness, because Commander Pike said, guess what? No, it doesn't.
Right, yeah.
We're not sort of Tom Cruising with your sunglasses around here, dude. So, in this third film, then, Kirk actually does not have to go through that again. He's accepted it. He understands. I'm a captain. I have to be good at this. I can't be chasing women around. I can't be making selfish, I think I look awesome doing this kind of decisions. And he really has sort of grown up. And that's great, but he does have to be careful to, I guess, not look like a guy who's already in his midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about Kirk's growth is that it dictated Spock's growth. Because Kirk was such a force on the bridge, Spock just adapted to him.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk baited him into becoming violent on the bridge, and Spock realized he was out-chessed. He was out-strategized.
Mm-hmm.
And part of him saying, I'm not fit to command, was understanding this human outwitted me just now. And he now just sort of goes along with all of Kirk's plans because he doesn't have any other choice. He has to compromise. And it's easy for Kirk to be nicer to Spock because now he's in command. And it's easy to be nice to someone that you can boss around.
Not that you always were when we were growing up. But theoretically.
So Spock has his own sort of thing going on, which was brought out, obviously, in that confrontation. You know, I'm human, I'm Vulcan. So, yeah, you know, Kolinar didn't really work for me. He was almost like the dentist elf from Rudolph. I don't want to join the Science Council.
Oh my gosh, that's great. And they even have pointy ears.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Now I just want to Photoshop them all in elf outfits.
And also, I don't understand girls. So there were many times watching Spock and Uhura, by the way, that I just wanted to hear in the background. Feelings.
Yeah.
But he did. He had that. And that's what makes Spock Spock, is he had the conflict of human, Vulcan, Vulcan, human. What I really want to see, I want to see Pixar do the Inside Out story of Spock's head.
Oh my goodness. Where all the emotions are kind of really calm?
No, not all of them, because there are rage emotions in there too.
Oh, because Vulcans feel emotions stronger than humans do, and that's why they had to learn to control them.
Yeah, so. And as a matter of fact, Leonard Nimoy, when asked how he approached Spock in the original series, said, "It's not what you think. I actually approached him as someone who has so many fierce emotions that he's in a constant struggle to keep them suppressed, and that's what his facial expression is."
Mm-hmm.
So
constipation.
He's very much he's very much the Bruce Banner of space.
You won't like me when I'm angry or yeah. sad or happy. Right. You won't like me any of those way moods.
Do you want to know my secret? I'm always human. Nice. But you get to the end, and now Spock laughs, and now he cries, and hangs out with his girlfriend at parties.
That was really sweet.
At this point, just give him the Vision sweater, and he's ready for the suburbs. The space burbs.
Yeah.
Whatever. I hear there's a nice little place near Alderaan that's up and coming.
No, don't go there.
No. All the agents say that neighborhood is just blowing up right now.
Oh, my.
But you can understand that in Spock, that both he and Kirk have this confidence because, you know, they fought the Khan and they won.
Yeah, they didn't get conned.
No. So in essence, I do think that we've had a good character arc. We've seen the entire crew as cadets. We've seen them forged by necessity. We've seen them become truly capable in the way where now they lean on each other as yet another skill that they have.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is something that you don't always see in a heroic character. Someone who says, not only can I do what I can do, but additionally in my arsenal, I have my compatriots.
Right, right. It'll be interesting to see if Guardians can get to that place.
I think it's fertile ground. I think, you know, if anything is set up to do that, Guardians is.
Yeah, because at this point they've only like basically just formed together as a group, not really working off of each other's strengths yet or anything.
I have heard that the next film will still have a baby/adolescent Groot.
I'm totally on board with that. You know why they made that decision? Because marketing. Because Dancing in a Cup Groot probably made billions of dollars.
I may or may not own a Dancing in the Cup Groot. It may or may not be in my office on my desk.
He's adorable.
So I do want to give a shout out to Simon Pegg for doing what I think was a truly amazing job in following what the fan reaction was to Into Darkness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And saying, we heard you.
The homage was way too heavy. Let's do a much lighter homage that's more just true to the spirit of Star Trek.
And what the spirit was exploration when we don't know what is coming up, but we hope that we can pull together enough to make it through it. And yeah. In the meantime, the reason that we can pull together is because humanity itself is better.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now, for God's sake, let the next movie have clean.
Please! So I'm going to say that I truly enjoyed it. It was not only worth the wait, but it was very satisfyingly so.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I
totally agree.
I would heartily recommend it, even to people who may not be Star Trek history buffs or Star Trek longtime fans. I still think watching this crew act as a family and pull together and watching them be an example of humanity being better is worth seeing. So thank you, Simon Pegg and Doug, your writing partner, for giving this to us.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what I just realized?
Hmm.
We have our rating system. And what I'm seeing is I'm giving out a lot of like smiling twos and threes and a couple frowning twos and threes, and you're like all fours and fives. It's either one end or the other.
Well, I have a system, if you care to know what it is.
Yes, I think we all do.
Why do I feel like I'm in front of the Federation Council now?
We all want to hear what you have to say.
No, Tyler Perry, I don't owe you anything. Because
nobody owes Tyler Perry anything.
Because you're Tyler Perry. I have a system of, would I watch this film again?
Mm-hmm.
Did I feel it was worth the ticket price?
Mm-hmm.
Would I recommend this to someone?
Mm-hmm.
Do I envy it enough that I wish I could have either written it or acted in it?
Okay.
Do I feel like it did justice to the characters and where we thought they were going?
Mm-hmm.
And at any time, did I sit there and roll my eyes or groan or start to say, I wish I wasn't here?
Okay.
So what I do is, first of all, I say, well, am I glad I was here or do I wish I wasn't? So that puts me on that side of it.
Right, right, right.
Speed Racer, eh.
Shocker, everybody. Not so much.
So if I'm already on the I'm glad I'm here side, then mm-hmm. I look at all the other factors.
Okay, that makes sense. I've got a similar system. I drink a lot of water before I go in, and then when my bladder's full, I see whether or not I really feel like I can leave. And in Star Trek Beyond, I didn't want to leave, so I held it.
So you gave
it... So it was already at two pandas right there.
You gave it two cross-legged, anxious pandas.
And the third one was just like, yay! Don't knock my system, it works.
Well, the third one was embarrassed and said, don't sit in this chair for a while. Okay, so I gotta say, the beginning of the film, because, mm-hmm. you know, the beginning of the film is always really important.
Right.
When Kirk is going on that ambassador mission, and he's got the box, and there's all these aliens just in the rafters, just looking down at him, and they're super angry, and they're getting all huge, and then they jump on him, and they're tiny.
Yeah, it was so great. That was awesome.
I thought, it's so good to see the Galaxy Quest aliens get work again.
Yeah, exactly. Because at first you're thinking, you know, like Klingon High Council, Kirk Bones trial.
Yeah.
And then, no, it's Tribbles.
Yeah. And then the other little touches, like when Bones pours Kirk a drink and they toast and he says, well, here's to good eyesight and full head of hair.
Oh, yes.
That was so funny to me because later Kirk completely loses his eyesight and Bones gives him glasses and it becomes a thing.
Because so we lose LASIK technology by that point?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And all those times that he ever beamed down, he never said, you know, just
correct my eyes.
A little LASIK.
A little cornea off the top, please.
I thought that Jayla as a character
mm-hmm.
was really, really refreshing.
Yeah, and I mean, props to the actress who wasn't originally an actress and who in her debut movie didn't get a lot to do emotionally.
Right.
She was one of the most convincing in the whole thing.
She really was. And I allowed myself the particular Star Trek nerd conceit because they didn't fully explore her backstory.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, I know who she is. She is a descendant of, in this reboot alternate timeline, the two species from Let This Be Your Last Battlefield.
Oh, nice.
The black on white side, white on the other side species actually worked it out. And that's Jayla, which is why she's so tough and why she is who she is. And I was just incredibly satisfied just sitting there alone in the dark thinking that.
So while her fighting style I see as a weakness, her character overall definitely a strength.
Also, sneaky little trivia. Did you know that Simon Pegg's writing partner was Sulu's husband in the film?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. I was going to guess after you started the sentence, though. But that's pretty cool.
So that's a great little piece of history, because in years to come, when somebody says, wow, that was a really great scene that we saw, who was that other guy? It was the man who co-wrote the film.
He's the one who put his husband through hell.
So let me ask you something as a Star Wars fan.
All right.
Was it slightly disconcerting? Was it interesting? Was it cool? Or was it just WTF that the same dude from The Force Awakens was in Star Trek Beyond?
So which one are you thinking of?
The guy from Lost that sort of J.J. Abrams puts in everything.
Oh, Greg, as the people on Fly Casual Podcast call him.
Yeah.
It was really funny because I saw him here and I was like, it fits. He fits here. It works here. It doesn't stand out. There was something about the way he delivered his lines in The Force Awakens where it's like, hey, I'm in the movie. And in this one, he's just a bro with a desk job and it works. So it didn't freak me out. I was just like, oh, yeah, that's how it should have been done.
But now I want the crossover.
He's the one to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Snap Wexley, if you wanted to know what his name was. If you didn't, now you know anyways. And with that, I think we've come to the conclusion of our show, perhaps?
Yes. We've come to the satisfying... The satisfying? Sure.
Yes. Would you say our show rose or fell, or did we just come full circle back to the nonsense with which we started?
I would say that our show blew up again.
with followers.
Because not yet Klingons.
Please put in Klingons as the main villains.
And Deadpool.
Yes. So do you have a battle cry for today?
Oh, I mean, we
already kind of used our Star Trek-y ones.
You get me with this every week. Do you have one?
No, I hadn't thought of one. I would do Min Mae's "We Can Win." It beats "To Be in Love." Must be the greatest feeling that a girl could feel. I know all the songs. I know most of the Japanese ones, too. Oh my gosh. Stop me.
All right, I feel like we need a really strong ending that I haven't given you.
Well, screw your courage to the sticking place, then. Let's have it. It's all or nothing. Just screw... do it. I'm loving it. Eat more chicken. I digressed.
Eat more chicken.
I don't know, I just started saying slogans and
drink more
McDonald's led to Chick-fil-A. Is that our battle cry today? Eat more chicken.
Oh, drink more Ovaltine.
Yes. So yeah, thanks to everyone for listening, and if there's anyone who is giving us a shot because we got a shout out from the Fly Casual Podcast, thank you for giving us a shot. And hopefully shoot us some more.
Yes. And remember, never maroon a warlike Federation captain on a planet when death is on the line.
See you next time, guys.
See you next time. Absolutely. Yeah. I did somewhat think that finding a motorcycle randomly on a starship vessel was a little convenient, but no more so than the wheelbarrow in The Princess Bride.
Yeah. I wouldn't give her a Holocaust cloak.
I wanted as Kirk like pulled the canvas cover off the motorcycle, I wanted that then to actually go, oh, a Holocaust cloak.
I am the great Captain James T. Quark. But soon you will not be here. Cue Beastie Boys.
Well, you know, give Kirk a break. He's been mostly dead all day.